nasse Wäscherin wäscht zur Nachtzeit bleiche Tücher. Nackte silberweiße Arme streckt sie nieder in die Flut. Durch die Lichtung schleichen Winde, leicht bewegen sie den Strom. Eine blasse Wäscherin wäscht zur Nachtzeit bleiche Tücher. Und die sanfte Magd des Himmels von den Zweigen zart und schmeichelt, breitet auf die dunklen Wiesen ihre lichtgewobenen Linnen. Eine blasse Wäscherin.
We did some research in history, in Berlin history of music, like the last 100 years, and so, and it was very interesting, because some parts are already known, but some, especially the like the East German composers, somehow, weren't played anymore in the 90s, and somehow got lost in music history, but there's some really exciting pieces.
We were at the very beginning trying to work out, as a Berlin ensemble, how can we kind of not show our appreciation, but kind of show the relevance of the city, not only as its kind of political history, but also its musical history. And so we devised basically this series to kind of highlight the 10 different decades of Berlin musical history, starting with the Schönberg Revolution. And as Clement says, it was a very exciting kind of way to explore and see how everything somehow connected with this repertoire that doesn't get played too much. It was a pleasure to find it and to study it and to perform it. So it was a fantastic experience.
Schwarze Riesenfalter töteten der Sonne Glanz. Ein geschlossenes Zauberbuch ruht der Horizont.
Welcome to Relevant Tones. I'm Seth Bosted, and my guests on the program today are Clemens Hund-Gerschel and Martin Smith, the pianist and cellist from the Berlin-based Zafran Ensemble. I met Zafran recently and got to hear them perform at the Classical Next Festival in Berlin, and they told me about this fascinating project in which they produced 10 concerts featuring music by Berlin-based composers, composers with a connection to Berlin, and some commissioned pieces relating to 10 different decades in Berlin, starting with the 1910s. In many ways, this is such an interesting journey through classical music history itself, starting with the revolutionary music of Arnold Schoenberg's Pierrot Lunaire, which I opened up the program with, and on into the 20th century. Let's continue the discussion. Welcome to Relevant Tones. I'm Seth Bosted. My guests on the program today are Clemens Hund-Gürschel and Martin Smith, the pianist and cellist from the Berlin-based Zafran Ensemble. I met Zafran and got to hear them perform at the most recent Classical Next Festival in Berlin, and they told me about this fascinating project in which they produced a series of concerts featuring music by Berlin-based composers, or composers with a connection to Berlin, plus some new commissioned pieces. And these pieces are relating to different decades in Berlin's musical history, starting from the 1910s up to the 2010s. This is such an interesting idea to me. It's a fascinating journey, I think, through classical music history itself. I mean, it's all about Berlin, but Berlin from the 1910s on shaped so much of classical music history, starting with the revolutionary music of Arnold Schoenberg's Pierrot Lunaire. We heard a couple of pieces from that at the top of the program, and on into the 20th century, and on through the rest of the 20th century. But it's such an interesting journey through classical music history itself, starting with the revolutionary music of Arnold Schoenberg's Pierrot Lunaire, and I opened up the program with a couple of movements from that piece, and on through the 20th century and beyond. Let's continue the conversation. What's something you feel like you learned about the project you didn't already know about Berlin? Certainly the music I know you discovered and is new, but historically too, I you know, and obviously the historical period informs the music, right? I mean, no piece of music comes out of a vacuum, as we know. So just off the top of your head, I'm just curious, you know, tell me a couple of things that you feel like you know, surprised you maybe, or that you learned after doing this project.
Yeah, for me, there were some details which were really interesting, like the concert, the second concert about in the 20s, there was this Vox Hall, which was in broadcasting radio hall, but concert hall, which doesn't exist anymore, which is quite at the place where the Philharmonie in Berlin is now. And in this hall, there were like the students performed their piano sonatas. And then there were people in the audience like Schoenberg and Hans Eisler and famous people to imagine how that atmosphere must have been and how Berlin looked like at this time. And then also some connections between composers I know or I knew, how they related to how, for example, is a bridge from Schoenberg to Morton Feldman, where they had master classes or teachers and students. And then these connections are really interesting. And for example, when I was at school, my teachers, to see, okay, they had teachers and they had teachers, and then we come to Schoenberg, and there's a connection also for my education. This was really interesting. I haven't thought about this before.
Yeah, how did you approach the venues? I mean, each of these pieces was performed, right? They were all performed live. So, I mean, a lot of the venues that these pieces were premiered in don't exist anymore. Did you try to at least be in the same part of town, or how did you approach that aspect of it?
Obviously, we tried to kind of see what might still be standing, and sometimes it's always not possible to have the exact same venue, but we tried to, I think Clemens as well, we basically called everyone we possibly could to see if we could kind of keep the east and the west kind of locations of these venues the same. Sometimes it was possible, sometimes it wasn't. But we ended up also, because of maybe the venue wasn't available, we were able to find some other kind of locations that were still historically significant, but not necessarily the same venue where they were premiered. That makes sense.
Yeah. Like for the 20s, where the Vauxhall doesn't exist anymore, we found the Meistersaal, which is a place with kind of a similar history, and it's not too far from the original box set, which is actually the place where David Bowie recorded his Berlin album. It's a very nice place, and was nice to record there.
Yeah, that's cool if that's still around. Because I feel like the 1910s and 20s were a time of change. There was a lot swirling around. There's a lot of things where You know, I mean, in 1912, you know, Wagner had only been dead for what, a couple of decades, right? I mean, so that's like, it's kind of, I mean, because I think it is such a modernist era, but it's actually very well connected to the previous era. Thank you.
So this was the 20s, this obviously the second decade, and this was in the hall that Clemens was talking about before, the Meistersaal. And the premiere that we kind of built the concert around was the premiere from Stefan Wolpe, which was the first piano sonata, Stehende Musik. And Clemens, where was that? That was in the Vox Saal that was presented, or where was that premiered? I forgot.
Yes, there's the sonata, yes, yeah.
And so then we built, we didn't build it, but we kind of combined that with the program of Ursula Mumlock, who I believe studied with Wolpe, but was born she was born in Berlin, the pieces were, we had the Anton Webern Quartet, clarinet, saxophone, violin, and piano, and then two works from Ursula Mumlock, the From My Garden, viola, and the Five Bagatelles. It was definitely an active time back then.
It's really interesting because I mean they had problems too at different decades, and I mean there were like five different types of how do you say of state how do you say would you say
emergency.
Martier form kind I mean the Weimar, Third Reich, then East Germany, West Germany, then the reunion, and so they were difficult. So then we had this COVID time and we thought, okay, but how is that referring to the other problems they had at this time? that was this interesting aspect in this. If I can add something for the 20s, mm-hmm. I mean, as we said before, there was this kind of new, the 12-tone music and so on. But also in the 20s, there was this kind of roaring 20s club, cafe music, and so, and especially the students of Schönberg, like Eisler, like Stefan Wolpe, or especially also like Ernst Czernik, they were often in the evenings and nights they were listening and doing other stuff, and they were influenced by the early jazz. And especially also, we will hear this in the 30s also in the program, the influence of that. But in the 20s, it opens with Stefan Wolpe, who had a brother who fought against the Nazis and lost his eye. He was a cartoonist. And Stefan Wolpe, so he was also politically active, fighting against the right-wing parties. And so that's why I also had to leave early, first to Russia, then Palestine, and then to the US. And then because of this kind of, he was also in contact with Anton Webern, and in the 12-tone music, they try to separate the different parameters, like dynamic tones and like articulation and this stuff. And what Stefan Wolpe did in the piano sonata is to say, okay, I reduce the whole music on rhythm, and the melodic material is really reduced, and I barely use different dynamics. So this is an aspect he taught to his students. So then that's why also Morton Feldman and these people began to throw other parameters away and say, okay, I just focus on soft chords or whatever. So, and it's really interesting how Schönberg's 12-tone thoughts turned in this direction.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up. There's kind of a lot to unpack there, which you're talking about. I mean, I love that. I never thought about that before, but a direct line from Stefan Wolpe to Morton Feldman with the soft chords. But also, I mean, the Weimar years in Germany, most people think of it as a time of decadence, of, you know, the cabarets, yeah, the, you know, Bertolt Brecht, yeah, and that kind of thing. Yeah. And Stefan Wolf's going the opposite direction, you know, yeah. Like, I mean, with these very soft chords. That's a really interesting thing to think about.
Yeah. And then, and this Ursula Mamluk was also very, very personal for us because she moved back when she was, I don't know, I'm not sure, let's say 80. She moved back to Berlin. She went to school in Berlin, and then she came back, and we met her, and we played her pieces, and we worked together. And I mean, she died before we did the concerts. So, but earlier we worked with her, and it was also nice to see this circle, like from Stefan Wolpe, who had to emigrate, and then and also Ursula Mamluk, that also somehow it comes back, and there's an exchange again, and yeah, that was also really nice to integrate in the program.
Yeah, and as we move into concerts 3 and 4, 1930s and 1940s, we're going to see a lot more immigration, right? We're going to see a lot of people leaving Germany. How did that influence your programming? Did you want to go with people who were in Berlin at the time, who were in East Berlin, or did you want to go? Was it, you know, open to anybody from that time period?
I think we didn't restrict ourselves too much. Basically, the idea was that we would focus on one or two pieces that were kind of premiered from whoever composed it of that time in Berlin. And then we would then try and do the patchwork of trying to then kind of see possible connections from that person. And so the interesting thing was that a lot of these people, like Volpe and Schoenberg as well, it's quite an exhaustive kind of umbrella of like family tree of students and kind of the way they're able to influence people. And it was quite a, yeah, I mean, I remember we had a conversation at the very beginning, and it was actually quite a challenge to kind of keep it to however many, like to four or five pieces per concert, because it is actually quite a fascinating, like as Clemens was saying before, this kind of how these composers were kind of influenced and then how their kind of counter influence was influencing other composers. And it's hard to kind of keep it in one small bucket without kind of making it too long or too complicated. And it was a fascinating kind of seeing the connections, I guess, because appear from these composers.
So what pieces are on concerts 3 and 4?
So we had this incredible piece from Stravinsky, the Duo Concertant, which was premiered in 1932 in Berlin. And then, of course, from Stravinsky, we had some other works of Paul Dessau, who was also a very kind of, you know, prominent and well-known kind of East German composer. Also, Rudolf Wagner Regnier. Thank you.
Let's talk about the fourth concert, 1940s.
And so this was, in the kind of span of COVID kind of lockdowns and everything. We'd planned for this concert, which was basically a quartet concert with clarinet. That was the instrumentation for the evening. And we found very kind of, I mean, it's a quite a well-known venue here in Berlin. It's the Club der Polnische Versager. This kind of very kind of historical, almost like a kind of a small cafe slash bar slash club that has received kind of historical kind of significance in the from the city of Berlin. And it's this kind of, it's a very kind of unique space because it was a very, like a parlor basically. And it's to be playing then this music from the 40s in this kind of location was one of these moments where you think like, okay, this is kind of a little bit like out of a movie. And so on the program we had that evening, from Hans Eisler, he, as Clemens also said before, he actually wrote the national hymn for the East Germany basically. And so we played that arranged for quartet, which was also very kind of unusual, would be quite a, I mean, I personally, before this whole project began, I wasn't aware that there actually was even a hymn for East Germany, but I found out, and it's actually quite an incredibly beautiful kind of song lead. And then we also then played this slow movement of Haydn's Emperor Quartet, and which is then now the Emperor's Quartet, and which is now the which was also kind of like the hymn of Germany as well. So it was a really kind of incredible incredible contrast in the one program. Then we played from Günter Kochan five pieces for string quartet, and then from Ruth Zechlin, also a quartet that was also premiered in Berlin, and she was also very kind of significant in Berlin, in East Berlin. She was also the head of the music school here, the Hans Eisler music school. She was the dean, and also was quite prolific in her composition output. Thank you.
Ruth Zechlin, she said also, like, her generation, she in 1945, she was 19 years old. So she said, I mean, she couldn't hear any of this entartete Musik during the Nazi era. So she didn't know a Mahler, she didn't know Schönberg, Weber, and all these people. They were incredible, much music to catch up then in the 50s. And when she studied, there was an open whole world she hadn't heard before, but was written while she was already alive. And so she said that was really interesting to explore and to refer to. But at the same time, what happened, I mean, Hans Eisler, he was, because he was Jewish and a communist, he had to leave the country. But then in the US, he was sent back because of, how is it called, un-American, how did they call it? I don't know. Like Bertolt Brecht and these people, they had this kind of strange, where they had to say that they are no communists and that they don't work with the Russians and these things. So he had to go back. But then the people they had there wanted to start from new, from scratch, to build a new music, a new education, to make everything better than before. But soon they had to get to know that politics were still somehow politics, and that the governors in the Soviet or the East German, that they had different ideas how the meaning of music should be and what the music is for. So all these people, like Dietrich, Zechlin, Eisler, and Kochan, they had somehow to deal with to write music that is okay for the politicians, for the and somehow is also interesting in their personal way and how they want to express music. But they had to, but I mean, they had to write songs for pupils, for the workers, or Requiem for Lenin or whatever. Sometimes they wanted to, sometimes not. So like Shostakovich, they had these struggles.
One of the things we heard Clemens and Martin talking about was the music of Hans Eisler. He studied with Schoenberg. He was a very important figure in East Germany. And in fact, he wrote the anthem for East Germany. I had no idea East Germany even had an anthem. It's called Auferstanden aus Ruinen, Risen from Ruins. I do think we should hear it here at the end of the program. So here is a recording of Zafran Ensemble from the 4th Berlin Concert performing Risen from Ruins by Hans Eisler. Thank you. That's all the time we have on the program for today. This is part one of a two-part program, and I'll continue with part two, the 1950s through the 2010s, next week, or if you're listening later, in the next program. I hope you'll join us for that. Relevant Tones is a production of Access Contemporary Music, a nonprofit organization with the mission of providing equitable access to the transformative power of music making. Find out more at acmusic.org. And for Relevant Tones, I'm Seth Bosted. Thanks so much for listening.